That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That Money Show live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. I am back. I've been off for a couple of weeks. You might have heard some different voices on the show. Big shout out to Bobby for taking over from me for the past 2 weeks. But we are back, and we are back with a vengeance. No, there's no anger in here. But we are back to do that one thing that I promise we will do every single week, and that is to make you better with your money. For the next hour or so, I will do the one thing that schools failed you on, your parents failed you on, but they might have done a good job. But maybe your parents failed you on, but definitely universities, graduate schemes, apprenticeships, your jobs, the places where you were never taught what to do with your money. Well, guess what? We've built an entire show to do just that. So stick around, sit back, put these things in your ears, some headphones or anything like that, and I will make you better with the cash in your pocket. And how do I do that, here you ask? Well, I come at you from a few different angles, if that's okay. Number one, I hit you with the economy jab. What's going on in the world? But not just what's going on in the world, what's going on that actually affects the money in your pocket? What do you need to know that A, will make you make better decisions with your money, and B, will make you sound really smart the next time you start talking to your friends about what's going on in the economy? And then after that, I hit you with another jab, some money questions, the questions that you've written in about. I like to answer them because what's the point of a show if you can't talk to me as well? So you can always DM us on Instagram. Our handle is @thatmoneyshow. It makes sense. It's the name of the show. Send in some questions and I will answer them. I also will be speaking to a range of experts, guests, famous faces, and personal finance experts all about the topic of money, their own experiences, their own advice, some teaching and some learnings from them. And coming up this week, we've got two really cool guests, actually. Number one, James McCaffrey from Totally Money, to speak about all things to do with your credit score. Again, you might be like, oh, eye roll, credit score, what? No. Useful. Listen, guys, I promise you, knowing about your credit score can literally, and I'm not exaggerating here, you might think I am, save you hundreds of thousands of pounds throughout your future. That's right, hundreds of thousands. I've gone into six-figure territory. And if you don't believe me, just wait until you hear this conversation. And also, I've got Susanna Streeter, who's going to come in to break down everything from the hottest word of last week, tariffs. If you haven't heard of the word tariffs last week, then you've either been living under a rock or you just don't care about money, in which case, interesting you've tuned to this show. But we appreciate you all anyway. However, most of you will have heard about the word tariffs, the tariffs that are coming out of the US. Mr. Trump, President Trump, announced a set of tariffs pretty much against the entire world, us included. We have a 10% tariff on goods and products and services that we send to the US. And we'll be covering all of that, as well as the little effect it had on the entire world economy and the world stock market. And by little, I mean markets have literally crashed. Every market around the entire world, some more than others. You might have seen, type in the FTSE 100 right now onto Google. Over the past 5 days, what's it done? Probably crashed. S&P 500, which is the US market, probably crashed. Japanese markets, definitely crashed. So all I'm saying is it's a pretty big topic. Stick around and we will break down everything you need to know about it, as well as what I'm currently doing with my investments, which have lost multiple four figures. That's right. My pension is down. My investments are down. All of it is down. And whilst some people are panicking, I'm actually pretty calm. And I'll tell you why, but a little bit later on in the show. Anyway, to the news. I kind of gave you a bit of news already, but a few interesting things going on outside the world of tariffs, because we can't keep on talking about that all the time. It's probably going to be the focus of the show for the next several weeks. So let's talk about some other things first. Number one, is are you learning or have you learned to drive recently? And if so, a second question for you, did someone support you financially learning to drive? And then a third question, was that person your grandparents? Because apparently, due to a recent survey, over a third of grandparents are going to be helping their grandchildren learn to drive. I'm trying to think if my grandparents helped me. I don't think they did. At least they didn't to my face. Whether they helped my parents who helped me, different subject because I did not have the money to learn how to drive. And especially looking at how much it costs today, inflation is definitely real because grandparents, like I said, are contributing in over a third of cases to their grandchildren. On average, a grandparent will be spending £140 on their grandchild to help them with driving-related costs. And that probably doesn't even scratch the surface of how expensive it is to take on that skill set of learning to drive a metal box around the roads these days. So, what are some of the costs involved at the moment and why are we seeing so much support from grandparents? Well, average cost of a driving lesson in the UK at the moment, I saw £35 a lesson. I swear I was only paying 20 and I learned to drive 10 years ago. Anyway, £35 on average for a lesson. But the things really start to get scary when you look at car insurance and just how much it costs to insure a 17-year-old on average in this country, bearing in mind that the average 17-year-old is probably driving some beat-up 10, 15, 20-year-old car. I'm still driving a beat-up 10, 15, 20-year-old car. So I don't know, it's not only 17-year-olds. But assuming that is probably the likely case of what the car that you are driving, it costs on average car insurance £2,258 to insure a 17-year-old, compared to the average car insurance price of £777. That's right, almost three times the cost if you are 17 years old. That is absolutely wild. So you get through the lessons, £35 a lesson. Let's say on average it's 15 lessons. That is, let me just do some quick maths, around £500 or so on driving lessons. You then have to pay for the test. I know there's that like a six-month wait list on tests as well, unless you know you pay for that. I don't know the situation that gets you a test earlier. I've heard there's a thing. I'm not going to go into it in detail. I think it's pretty dodgy, but people are doing it anyway. So then you then pay for your test. You might have bought a car for a couple of grand, let's say another £3,000 on top of that. And you sit back, you're actually like, I am ready to drive. And then someone goes, £2,258 for your car insurance, please, mate. Yeah, I can start to see why we're not just going to parents for financial support, but we're going to grandparents for financial support. This thing is expensive. And then you're out there driving. You might have covered your car insurance. You might have covered the price of the car. You might have done your lesson and paid for your test. And you realise to fill up a tank is like £65. And you're probably doing that every single month. And then you've got to do maintenance, which on average is like 1-5% of the car's cost every single year. And then you've got to cover your MOT every single year, another £50. And then you've got to cover your car insurance tax. I don't even know how much that costs. I don't know how much I paid for that this year because you just have to pay it. Because if you don't tax your car, then you, I guess, can't legally drive it. So yeah, let us know. DM us at That Money Show. Are your grandparents helping you pay to drive or learn to drive? And on top of that, how much has it cost you from turning 17 years old to get behind a wheel? I'm super interested to hear some of the real numbers behind some of your stories. And if you are watching live, tell me as well. I will read them live off the screen how much it costs you to drive a car. Now, in some slightly better news, I am a big advocate of financial education. I'm literally delivering that into your ear holes right now. And apparently, pupils in England are about to be taught more about online spending and scams. Oak National Academy, that was set up during the pandemic to support online learning, have apparently released a set of over 80 financial lessons aimed at children between 5 and 16 to address topics such as online spending risks and including things like in-game purchases and influencer marketing. Put my hands up there. Might have got involved in that. It's kind of my job. But this is great. Pupils in England are going to be taught all about these topics in school. And it's because of certain case studies, like the one I'm about to read you, where an 8-year-old daughter spent more than £8,500 over a 90-day period on the Apple App Store, unaware that the money she was spending was real. This is not just a one-off scenario. This is happening up and down the country. People in school age, honestly, people throughout the entire age range of life, 30, 40, I've got friends, do not understand how to deal with money. And you can understand why an 8-year-old would be on an Apple store, and if the credit card is already set up to the Apple store on their parents' phone or iPad, they're just going to click pay, because they're being pressured to, probably by the games they're playing, by the, you know, social media people they're watching, by things, subscribe to this, subscribe to that. Everything can be done digitally online with a click of a button. So no wonder £8,500 over 90 days doesn't even surprise me. So I'd love to know if these lessons are coming to your school, or if you ever had any level of financial literacy taught to you in school, because I did not, but this is obviously going to be a good thing. So what are you going to be learning? If you are in primary school, number one, why are you listening to this show? But number two, you will be learning things such as more of the basic money concepts, where money comes from, how to budget, understanding things like your wants versus your needs. If you're in secondary school, you're going to be tackling slightly more advanced topics like inflation, cryptocurrency, investing, and interpreting bank statements and payslips. It sounds boring. It's really bloody important, I promise you. And you're also going to learn things how to critically analyze claims from advertisers, campaigners, and online influencers, including me. Always fact check people, genuinely. I am just the most, what's the word? Skeptical person. So I always think something is wrong until it turns right. Doesn't always help you out in life, but it does protect you from slightly more dodgy things. And on that exact note of slightly more dodgy things, Santander, that's the weirdest way I've ever pronounced Santander, but Santander UK have revealed the scams that are most likely to catch out different age groups. Now, this is off the back of a thing called they have called a scam tracker. And they have seen that in the first quarter of 2025, there has been a huge rise in the scams for both older adults, that's people over the age of 80, as well as younger adults between the age of 18 and 34. So if you're sitting there all smug thinking, yeah, obviously grandparents over 80 are getting scammed because they just don't understand the digital world. Well, think again, because 18 to 34-year-olds have had a massive spike in the amount of scams they've been susceptible to in the first quarter of 2025. That is a 7% rise on people over the age of 80 and a 6% rise of the people between 18 and 34. Now, you might think 6% isn't that big, but when I tell you that £18.4 million was stolen from Santander customers in the first quarter of 2025, you'll realise that a 6% spike is quite a lot. Overall, it's a 13% decrease from last quarter, but it's still a massive increase in those two age groups. So, listen out to some of the scams and let us know which one you've fallen prey to. No, I'm joking. Hopefully, you haven't been falling prey to any of these. But do let me know if you haven't heard of these. And definitely keep an eye out for these kind of scams because there's such a variety. Number one, impersonation. Scammers impersonating banks and government agencies like HMRC, especially around the end of the tax year that we just went through. Advanced fee scams where victims will tell you to pay first before sending your good or providing a service. Romance and friendship scams through kind of DMs on Instagram and social media apps. That's been, by the way, almost £3.5 million of those 18.4 total was through romance and friendship scams. And then things like gig ticket scams. More than 10% of purchase scams in the first quarter came from gig ticket scams. And just generally, fraudulent organisations are massively increasing their complexity of how they go about this. So I would love to know, have you ever fallen prey to a scam? Have you ever heard of someone falling prey to a scam? And if so, how did it happen? Because genuinely, like I said, my whole approach to anything within this world is if I get called by my bank, by any organization, I either hang up or I will call them back on their official line. That should always be your first port of call. Always be naturally suspicious. Unfortunately, I know it's not a great way to live life, but with scams becoming more and more complex, it's just the only way to manage them. Anyway, guys, stick around because straight after this, James McCaffrey from Totally Money is going to be coming in to speak all about credit scores.
FUPAR Radio.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
So we've got Dr. Matt Morgan. Someone's heart stopped beating for 8 hours.
So he was stuck on a ledge in a freezing snowstorm and his heart stopped for an amazing 9 hours. He's still the world's longest surviving cardiac arrest patient. And he lived because he was cold. You know, there's a saying, you're not dead until you're warm and dead.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
It was calm on the beach. So I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind. And it blew us out to sea. Faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson. From these guys. The crew. Who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
If you drink a little, then drive, you risk losing your license. You risk every day becoming more complicated.
How am I supposed to get to training, Dad? How am I supposed to...
You risk losing your job.
I'm going to have to let you go. You risk
your family not looking at you the same way.
I can't believe you did that.
You risk injuring someone.
Hello, I need an ambulance.
You risk being seen as a drink driver. Drink a little, risk a lot. Think.
What the hell with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Up now is Efren Mason Clark, professional footballer. You got the chance to work under Frank Lampard. Just tell me a little bit about him.
The first day he came in, it was just like, the word isn't starstruck, but it's just like, this is a legend in not just English football, but football in the whole world. So at the start, it was more of like, wow. And then it's like, you just switch off from being a fan to, this is like the gaffer now.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I want to find happiness and I need him to be kind.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, and joining me now in the studio is James McCaffrey from Totally Money. And as promised, we are going to be discussing every inch of the world of credit scores. We will leave no stone unturned. And I did mention earlier that there's possibility of saving 4, 5, 6 figures with a good credit score. These things are not unheard of, and James will explain it all to not only you, but probably to me as well, in case I've been telling you anything completely incorrect. But James, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon. Very good. Very well, thank you. Sun shining. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sun is shining. We're sat indoors. Pleasure to be here. I love it. James made me feel very, very hot when he walked in here because I'm in jeans and a wool jumper and he's wearing shorts and a t-shirt. So I might get changed the moment I leave the studio. But anyway, let's credit scores maybe. Less more important than
let's
shorts and
this.
T-shirt. Let's start right at the beginning. What is a credit score and how is it calculated?
So a credit score is basically 6 years of financial history. There's three main credit reference agencies who calculate that score. You've got Experian, TransUnion and Equifax. The scores differ slightly between them, but the sort of basic premise is that it's a look at how well you manage your money and if you're able to sort of manage your own credit. See if banks will then be sort of willing to offer you cash in the future.
I like it. It's like a screenshot or a screen grab of a moment in time of how responsible you are with your money.
Yes, and usually not exactly up to date. They can be like a 1-2 month lag in it. But yeah, it's just basically used to sort of look at how well you handle your money and what your history with it is. If you've missed any payments, for example, if you're using too much of your credit available to you, or just to double check where you live.
And why is that important in the first place? Why does someone need to show that they're financially responsible in life? When does it become relevant to them?
It's surprisingly more relevant than you might realise, because I think there's a lot of people out there who might think, you know, I'm a long way from buying a house, or I don't have a driving licence, so I'm not going to get a car loan. But in fact, if you want to pay for your energy on direct debit, you'll have your credit report checked. If you want to take out a mobile phone contract, they'll check your credit report as well. And if you want to sort of just take out a credit card to make a small purchase, it'll be checked too. So it kind of goes all the way from the day-to-day essentials all the way through to sort of, you know, most people's big goal of owning a home.
Yeah, I think this is a really important thing that you just said, because a lot of people hear credit score, they're like, I'm not buying a home anytime soon, especially with the current state of the housing economy. You know, like the average age to buy a property in this country is now 36 years old. It's just going up and up and up. If you're 22 years old, you're thinking, why do I need a good credit score? You've mentioned some really important things. Every element of your life that requires borrowing money in any way, shape or form will involve a hard credit check. But they'll look at your credit history and decide whether or not they want to do that. You want a phone contract with Voxy Mobile to get your unlimited. That's not an ad, by the way. Yeah. But this is the first one. It's so in my brain. To get you, you know, unlimited social media, they're going to check it to make sure you can borrow that contract every single month. If you want to, like you mentioned, get a credit card where you have to borrow money and then pay it back in full every month, guys, remember, as Martin Lewis shouts down your ears and every single time he talks about credit scores, you need to have a good credit score. What happens if you don't have a good credit score? What could be some of the consequences of that?
Well, if you don't have a good credit score, what is most likely is that you will potentially be paying more interest on any borrowing you're doing every month, or you might just be rejected outright for any applications you make. Calculations that we recently did show that for the average interest-bearing balance on a credit card, somebody with a good credit score could save around £900 a year compared to somebody with a bad credit score. So it's real material difference, and that can go into the thousands if you're talking about a personal loan. And then it just becomes really hard to get a mortgage if you've got a really damaged credit score, CCJs, or something that's holding you back.
So when I said at the beginning of this show, or just before you came in even, that a bad credit score in some case studies could be the difference between six figures, you know, throughout your life, I'm not probably far off.
Yeah, I would say you're not wrong, because that is based on sort of yearly costs. So then if you accrue that over the time, like somebody's lifetime, then you're looking into the thousands easily.
Okay.
Which, you know, can make a real difference to your life.
Yeah. And I know that this might not necessarily be the point, but you go for that biggie, which is the buying a house. A good credit score versus a medium credit score versus a bad credit score. Number one, it could be the difference between you ever getting on the property ladder, getting a mortgage in the first hand, or not getting it. Have there been circumstances where interest rates change for good lenders versus bad, like for versus bad lenders? You could get, you know, 4% interest if you've got a good score, 6% if you get a bad score.
Because the loans are so large, the lending criteria can be tighter, and that's why it can take longer to get a mortgage. But looking at it, you can end up paying, say, 0.5% or 1% more, which might not sound like a lot up front. But when you look at that over a 25 or 30 year mortgage term, and for the sum of money, it can really add up.
Yeah, if you're talking about borrowing £500,000 plus at a percentage different on your interest rate, could be the difference between multiple six figures, hundreds of thousands of pounds, if you're borrowing it over a 40 year period, let's say. So that's why, like, I just really want to stress to people the importance of not, you don't need a good credit score right now compared to, let's say, you're panicking about your current credit score. But just to start thinking about some taking some good actions to, you know, improve it slowly, slowly. So when you do get to the scenarios in life that can have the big ramifications, you've sorted it. You've sorted it now, nice and early, so that you don't have to stress about it down the line. Which leads me on nicely to the next question, which is, I've looked at my credit score. It's a little bit crap right now. I'm panicking. What steps can I take?
Well, you're taking the right steps, because research shows that one in four people haven't actually checked their credit score. And I think they can be quite daunting. It's not really something you want to be looking at necessarily, as 6 years of credit history and what's gone wrong. But it's really important to do it. I think while some banking apps will show your score, it's better downloading a free specialist credit score app, which will show you deeper insights into what it means and either how you're moving forwards or what's holding you back. You could get the Experian. We'll usually charge you for it. And that's for the Experian credit score. Totally Money will give you the TransUnion credit score for free. And Credibility will give you the Equifax one. Each of them should show you a personalized plan as well into what's been holding you back and how you can start moving forwards. It will come down to things like having never missed a payment, making sure you're on the electoral roll, and not using too much credit. And you can build that up over time. So you get people who have what they call a thin credit file, and that just means they've not got much credit history. But using a mobile phone contract, or, you know, taking out a credit card and using that responsibly, like you said, once a month, just making a payment on it, paying it back and clearing it. You don't have to be getting yourself in debt and you don't have to be worried about that.
Yeah, it's one of the smartest ways I've heard of people improving their credit score, because some people just go, I just don't want to touch credit cards. I've, like, my personality maybe is, it tends towards, you know, I will borrow too much if I start getting a credit card and spending on a credit card. I won't pay it back. I know I don't have that ability, so I'd just rather avoid it. But you don't have to just start switching over your life from debit to credit. You just mentioned a really easy way. If you get a credit-building credit card, which is literally a credit card aimed at building your credit score, and simply put on one repetitive transaction on it every single month, maybe you just put your petrol on it, and you pay that off in full every single month, that's just a nice, simple way for these credit score makers to look at you and go, he has £1,000 available to him. He borrows £100 every single month. So he's not borrowing anywhere near the full 100%. He's borrowing only 10%. Looks good on it. And he pays it off every single month. He looks really responsible. We're going to start upgrading his credit score slowly, slowly, slowly. And like you said, this can start to have really good and strong ramifications. But if I don't want to touch a credit card, there was a few others you mentioned. Can you dive into them and why they help?
So if you don't want to get a credit card, I mean, just having a few direct debits should help as well. So having a mobile phone contract. But again, if you want to get a mobile phone contract, you might need a good credit score to sort of get that handset wrapped into the deal as well. So it still does come back to keeping an eye on your credit score and managing it. All credit scores are sort of personal to you as well. So it kind of really depends on where you're coming from and if you've had a negative impact on your score in the past. I'd also say that just checking your credit report, you can keep an eye out for any errors that have gone on there, that have appeared on there, and you can request for them to be amended as well, because it might be something out of your hands which is holding you back, which is simply just not right on your credit report.
That's really, really good to hear. I think one other thing to mention that you said right at the start was the length of time that your credit score reflects back in history, because there are some people that might have had, you know, poor upbringings that led to have bad financial decisions. So maybe they did default on a credit card or on a loan. They've had CCJs against them and stuff like that. They had, you know, the creditors knocking on their door for certain loans that they didn't pay back. But they're trying to improve now. They're like on the right path. They're starting to sort out their debts. And this was 3-4 years ago. What should they know, and why should they think? Why is it important for them to be aware that this isn't going to be stuck on their history forever?
It is never too late to check your credit score and start taking action. And it is a 6-year cycle. So if you download a credit app today and start working on it, it will over time, and you start taking the right actions, your credit score over time will start improving. And it doesn't mean you have to wait for the whole 6 years for it to happen. It can start improving over a course of months and years as well.
Yeah, I love that. So it's just 6 years, guys. So if it's 7 years ago this thing happened, again, that's not on your file anymore. That's not on your system. But just because it's bad now doesn't mean you can't start taking steps to improve it slowly, slowly, slowly. And as long as it's heading in the right direction, that is the key thing. So you work for Totally Money. You're here to obviously share your experience and your knowledge of the world of credit scores. But what does a platform like Totally Money provide for the average consumer when it comes to the world of credit?
Well, once you sign up to the Totally Money app, you can get it in the App Store or Play Store. You'll download it, verify your details, because we need to make sure that it's you. And then once you get that, you'll get the 6 years of credit history and insights into where things might have gone wrong. So you might see that there was a missed payment 3 years ago, but over time you'll see that go back to 4 years, 5 years, and then hopefully disappear off your credit report altogether. We'll also give you like tips and hints to show you how you can improve. Suggestions on how to reduce your credit balance and improve your score. And there'll also be personalized recommendations, because say some people might have signed up to a 0% card for 18 months, but that might have been 2 years ago. And over time that might have, the offer's expired, and then it will give you a notification to say like, hey, you're actually eligible for another card. If you want to have one which carries more benefits, here it is. And we'll also sort of, if you are carrying a balance, give you tips on how to reduce that with like a balance transfer card as well. You can also connect via open banking and get deeper insights into how you're managing your money.
It's honestly, I love any app that just does the thinking for you. You know, like you might be listening to this entire conversation and just have felt overwhelmed. We've just given you a solution. There are apps like Totally Money and like other apps that exist on the Play Store and websites where you just don't have to do the thinking. It's all personal, it's all recommended, and it'll give you an easy step-by-step guide to start moving in the right direction. Even if you have a good credit score, there's no reason why not to even solidify it and build it and make it even better. There's always steps you can take to improve. James, thank you so much for your time on the show. Any leaving or parting words of wisdom you want to give our listeners?
Actually, when you were talking on the last segment and you're talking about fraud as well, you can check fraud. You'll get an alert with your credit report if there's been any applications made in your name which you don't recognise. So it's definitely worth downloading for many reasons, not just your credit score.
many reasons. Well, James, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Money Show here today. Well, there you go. That was everything you needed to know on the topic of credit scores from James McCaffrey, Totally Money. Give it a little look on the App Store right away if you haven't already. I use it. I would recommend it. Doesn't matter which provider you use. Just find out your credit score right now, people. Just find it out. Honestly, guys. Getting angry here. Anyway, it is time for Money Tip of the Week, where I like to give you something short, something snappy, something to the point that you can do right now to improve your money, something practical to take away. And for those of you that don't know, taking a look at my watch, it says we are currently sitting on the 7th of April 2025, which means as of yesterday, we entered a new financial year, a new tax year. Finance stuff reset, to give it its most simplest description. What does that mean for you and why should you care at all? Well, a lot of allowances have reset and I'm going to go through them to remind you of what is like, what is refreshed, what is new in the world of money that you can start doing to make you better with, well, with money. Kicking off with your ISA. You heard of ISAs, lifetime ISAs, cash ISAs, stocks and shares ISAs? Well, you have a £20,000 allowance every single tax year if you are over the age of 18. If you're under the age of 18, you have £9,000. But it's your parents who get to decide what to do with that, called a junior ISA. Anyway, across all of them, your £20,000 allowance has reset. I wish I should have got like a ding effect. Ding, ding, ding. So start thinking about where you want to use that allowance. Number two, your pension. £60,000 or 100% of your salary every single tax year. Ding, ding, ding. That has reset. I do think you can go back 3 years with that one, but ding, ding, ding. One of those years has just reset. Next one, capital gains. £3,000 of capital gains profit you can take every single year tax-free. Ding, ding, ding. That has reset. Dividends, £500 at the moment per tax year. Ding, ding, ding. That has reset. And interest that you can earn off savings accounts tax-free outside of an ISA. Remember, if that's inside of an ISA, all of this stuff is tax-free anyway. But outside of an ISA, £1,000 if you're a lower rate taxpayer, £500 if you're a higher rate taxpayer, zero if you're an additional rate taxpayer, so you can turn off the radio right now. And that's a ding, ding, ding from that one. And the last one is inheritance tax. You can give away £3,000 through gifts to your next of kin every single year. You can actually use last year's allowance as well. So that's £6,000 if you didn't use last year's. That has reset as of yesterday. Ding, ding, ding. Guys, stick around. We're going to have a short break. And afterwards, I'm going to be joined by Susanna Streeter to speak about the US tariffs, the things you wanted me to talk about from the start of this show.
Fubar Radio.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
Moira Higgins.
That's a Jordy Shaw thing.
Has scrubbed a shitty toilet with her ex-boyfriend's toothbrush. Why did she do this?
He's obviously done something very bad.
Do we know who he is? Does anybody know who he is?
No, but I mean, I don't think he'd want to know who he is.
No.
I think he'd probably go and hide in now, whoever that is.
Mate, if you're listening to this, go and buy a new toothbrush because you've still got the same one.
Get yourself to Turkey and get yourself some veneers because I can't imagine them teeth are going to last much longer.
No.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register-to-vote.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next. It's the sound of saying, I got you, mate. is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this. Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here. Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
The lovely Matt Phipps.
Hello.
The thing that surprised me most was how much joy I took in being, like, making people feel really uncomfortable. It's so
Amen.
Good. So good.
Your mum jokes change completely.
My friend the other day, she was like, how tall is your mum? And I was like, oh, she's 6 feet under. Yeah, they did not know what to do with that. Yeah. And then you let it hang in the air.
Yeah.
Politics Uncensored.
We kind of act like COVID didn't happen. Well, do you think it's had a lasting impact, at least on that young generation that experienced it?
The legacy of it in schools, you see the legacy of it in people's mental health. We're seeing the legacy of it even in public services, even in hotels, hospitality. Everything was stripped back to the bone, and the UK did not have the resilience to recover. So I think we are still definitely living in a post-COVID society where nothing really works as well as it did. If you think things were damaged by Brexit, things were double damaged by COVID.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello everyone and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, and it is finally time. It is time to talk about the most beautiful word in the world, which is tariffs. That was me paraphrasing a certain man that lives across the pond, Mr. Donald Trump, President Donald Trump to some, who, as of last week, implemented some tariffs. Tariffs, for those of you who don't know, are taxes on imports of goods and services. And us in the UK, we got hit by 10%. That's not actually that bad compared to what some other countries around the world got hit by. The EU, 20%. I believe China is 32% on top of previous tariffs they had on top of that, bringing them over 50% when it comes to their tariffs. I think Vietnam got hit by almost 90% tariffs. Anyway, tariffs. Like I said, lots of tariffs going on. And joining me on the show right now is Susanna Streeter, who is a global financial communicator and will help me and you understand a little bit more about what on earth is going on, because it has caused carnage. Susanna, welcome to That Money Show. I called it the most beautiful word in the world. That wasn't me speaking. That was Mr. Trump speaking. What is going on? What has happened? And why does it feel like the world is currently imploding?
Yes, there is huge volatility on financial markets. And it was all sparked by that infamous speech in the Rose Garden, where he announced this huge swathe of tariffs. And even though we did expect these tariffs to be imposed on the US's trading partners, we didn't expect, and that the world wasn't prepared for tariffs to come in at an average of around 30%, something between 10 and 20% was expected. But when you look at the level of tariffs that Trump has imposed now on China, more than 50% or 54%, and some tiny countries in the world which had trade surpluses with the US for various kind of ad hoc reasons, a very small island, which is mainly populated by penguins, actually sent some IT equipment to the United States. And because of that, this one-time sending, they've been slammed with tariffs of about 50%. I mean, some of the calculations upon which these decisions were made are extremely dubious, and they've been highly criticized by people right across the business, industry, economic spectrum, because they just don't really make sense. And they are so punitive. And so that's why you've seen this really big reaction on stock markets.
I love that. A few penguins are currently sitting around, I'd say scratching their head, but they've probably turned off the news by this stage because they just don't want to hear.
Nice.
That was much better than what I could come up with on the spot. I appreciate that. And yeah, places all over the world getting hit by crazy tariffs. Was it Vietnam, 90%? Am I mistaken there?
Yeah, it's more than 50% in Vietnam. And these are, this really matters for these economies, because we've had an era of so-called globalization. And that's where tariffs really have been mainly removed from between many countries. And there's this kind of rules-based order that is being followed, rules that have been thrashed out, the World Trade Organization. And generally, nations follow these rules, and it's enabled goods essentially to become much cheaper for consumers all over the world, and has also enabled some of those developing economies to have a bit more of a level playing field and be able to export to the world's largest economy, which is America, the United States. And Americans have been able to benefit from these really cheap goods, everything from clothing to tech. What's happened, though, is because of this, that manufacturing bases in the United States, many of them have closed because they haven't been as efficient and as cheap as those manufacturing bases in other parts of the world, including in China. China's built up its tech prowess, and Trump doesn't like this. But instead of thinking, well, let's have a longer term strategy like China did over many decades to build up industry, he wants to do it immediately by slapping tariffs on the world. Well, that's going to cause an awful lot of pain to the US economy, and it will backfire. And I think many of us have seen quite a few of the memes that have been flying around social media showing how it's backfiring on the US and how it's going to, because it means that consumer prices are going to go up and businesses will be damaged.
Absolutely. I mean, I've for a few weeks now, ever since the election, we've been speaking about tariffs. I've been explaining to the listeners about what tariffs are, how they work, how they actually end up hurting the consumers at the end of the day quite a lot more. A lot of research has shown that those are the people that get hurt the most from tariffs. And we're talking about US consumers who are the ones actually buying the products, the goods and the services at the end of the day. But instead, what I want to take a look at with you is something we mentioned right at the start, was how it has pretty much destroyed stock markets all around the world. It has been devastating. We've seen some of the worst days in stock market performance in different international stock markets that we have seen over the past 5-6 years, probably since the COVID crash, more or less. And it's been devastating. I think the number is 2 trillion wiped off the US stock market in a period of 2 days. And I mean, I was trying to have a quick look before you came on at the damage that's happened already today. I think the S&P 500 down at around 2-3% again today.
Yes, there'd be wild swings on Wall Street today. You saw the S&P 500, which is the broad gauge of how stocks are doing. Well, that fell really sharply. Then it veered into positive territory, and then it veered back into negative territory again. There is a lot of speculation about whether or not Trump will roll back on some of these tariffs. But he's now come out on Truth Social, his favorite means of communicating with the world, saying that if China doesn't step back from the retaliatory tariffs it imposed on Friday, that it's going to slam even higher tariffs back on China. So really ratcheting up really rhetoric that we've already heard from him. At the same time, though, he has said that negotiations will continue with other countries. And so that offers a glimmer of hope that perhaps, you know, we don't have the end of the story. We are perhaps just in the first chapter of this tariff storm, and that actually he could well roll back on some of the more onerous tariffs on other countries. However, it does look as though when it comes to China, that he is determined to keep some of these tariffs, the really tough tariffs on, because he wants to pull business away from China. And he thinks that this is the best way of doing it, even though it's likely to take many, many years, if at all, for the US to really compete effectively in these sectors, because manufacturing has been mothballed and they're just simply not as great as they used to be.
When in doubt, double down, eh? That's the policy that he seems to be going for. He's not giving up. He's not stepping back. He's trying to use this as a huge leveraging tool against much of the world, including the UK, who are going to be going out there and probably trying to enhance using their special relationship they've got with the US to see what they can do. And pretty much every country is probably currently sending ambassadors, if not the top leaders of the country, to try and do some form of negotiation, because this is detrimental. I think Rachel Reeves today said the world has changed as we know it. So a lot of big impacts. But for the average consumer, you know, the average person in the UK right now, how is it impacting them, or how will it start to impact them? I mean, for example, the amount of messages I've been receiving about people's investments, about people's pensions. Of course, these are highly linked to both the UK and the US stock market. Big downturns, meaning they're seeing big losses, panic. Panic in the market is never good. And, you know, a lot of, I suppose, personal finance experts are kind of keeping with the rhetoric, keep calm and carry on. A lot of the time, the reactions to this are often more painful than the actual actions that are currently occurring. People make very painful and irreversible decisions. So what is happening to the average consumer, especially here in the UK?
Well, yes, if they look regularly at their pension or their investments that they might have in ISAs and stocks and share ISA, it's likely that they're going to see, and certainly I've experienced this, falls in the value of their investments. But let's remember, investing is meant to be a long-term game. Game, I should say, and, you know, a long-term gain. If you look over an historic basis, we've had lots of volatility in the past, big stock market falls. But over the long term, you do see that the stock market does outperform any cash investments, because if you leave cash in a low-bearing interest account, it's effectively the purchasing power of that cash is eroded due to the effects of inflation. So over the longer term, history has shown that stock markets investments do beat that type of cash investment. But you need to have a longer term horizon, because when you do get big shocks like this, and certainly these aren't the first I've covered in my career at all, when you do get big shocks, the market does take a little bit of time to recover. But usually it does. And that's what we've seen in the past. So if you look at the falls that we've had, 4% fall of the FTSE 100 today, well, back on the 12th of March 2020, the FTSE 100 fell by nearly 11% in one day as we headed into the pandemic. There were really big falls during the dot-com crash, also the great financial crisis of 2008. But if you hold your nerve and stay invested and don't chop and change your investments and try and time what the market is doing, if you sit on your hands and not do anything, actually you will find that your portfolio will have rebounded, because that is what has happened on a historic basis. Now, you can't always predict the future, but given that this kind of pattern of volatility followed by a recovery happens time and time again, I certainly wouldn't be too worried. Now, if you need to take your money out soon, that is a worry, because you could be then crystallizing your losses. But that is why if you're investing, you should only do it over a period of 5 years or more. So if you need your money before 5 years, don't put it in the stock market. Put it in a cash savings account with a high rate of interest, so you can access it when you need it. But if you've got a horizon of 5 years or more, well, then it's really worth looking at investing. Mm-hmm. And to ride out the types of volatility we see right now, drip feed those investments, because then you can benefit. You keep buying smaller amounts, you can benefit for when the market turns for the worse, like now, and you could be buying at a low point and then benefit from the recovery. But certainly it's not a time to panic, suddenly withdraw your investments and say, I'm not going to dabble anymore. But you've just got to just hold your nerve, but also think about when you need that money before you start on an investment journey.
Very, very important to say. The only way you actually lose money from these investments is at the period of selling them. Otherwise, it's all on paper, guys. It's all they say in the Wolf of Wall Street, it's a fugazi. It's made up numbers until you actually go and you mentioned and crystallise those losses or gains.
The losses that we've seen on Wall Street, where they've come off the back of quite a few years of huge gains.
Susanna, thank you so much for coming on That Money Show. Thank you for explaining tariffs, giving us a little bit of glimmer, a little bit of hope at the end of the tunnel. But guys, keep your eyes peeled. It's really important. Stay informed. And thank you for joining us on That Money Show.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. That was a really good explanation on everything you really need to know about tariffs. But I do want to spend a bit of time with you now, because I think the average person listening to this show right now is in panic mode. They might have heard about investing because they might have been interested in money, so they might have started dabbling in it. Maybe they're looking at their pensions, maybe they're a little bit older, and all you're seeing right now is red, red, red. Money down, money lost, things going very, very, very badly. And so I want to spend a bit of time with you if you are interested in the world of investing and you are reacting to this news. Because I've had multiple four figures taken off my portfolio, pension, investments, because of the past 3 days. And I'm doing nothing, literally nothing. I didn't even know that it was actually happening until someone told me on like Friday morning. That's how irrelevant the news is to me and my investments. And I'm going to explain why, okay? Number one is, and Susanna said this, when you invest for the long term. So most people put away their money. If you're not trading and trying to buy and sell and buy and sell and buy and sell, you're probably putting it away. Common advice is for more than 5 years. I like to say more than 10, but my money is ideally going away for 20 plus years. I'm currently 5 years into that journey. So my game plan hasn't changed here, guys. Just because my money's taken a bit of a downturn, it's been on such a positive turn for the past few years that there's no need for me to panic or do anything or take any actions. My money is still locked away for at least 5, 10, 15 years. So this is just another downturn. The whole point of the stock market is it can be volatile. And we're seeing that today. We're seeing that this week. But that doesn't mean we react to it because you have a plan and you stick to it. Another thing is the stock market, if let's take the S&P 500, has an 100% recovery rate. Now, I'm not saying that you can guarantee historic returns in the future, but 100% recovery rate is pretty good. Every time there's been a crash, 2008 financial crisis, 3 years it took for the markets to recover. COVID, which was a pretty bad downturn in the market, 3 months for the market to recover. So this is just another thing to be aware of. It's all about your mindset, okay? If you panic, you crystallize those losses. If you have a plan and you're a long-term investor, these are the bumps that are pretty much guaranteed to happen in the road. And the whole point is do not panic. I saw someone explain this in a really nice way the other day. They said, let's say you've bought yourself a house. Let's say you've somehow managed to buy yourself a £500,000 house, £500,000. And someone comes to you today and they go, I'm going to buy that for £250,000. Are you going to sell it? Like, would you sell it to them for that money? Of course not. You'd be like, get out of here. I'm not selling this house for £250,000. Firstly, I'm not selling this house because I expected to live in it for the next 20 years. But B, I'm not going to sell it for half the price I bought it for. Every day in the stock market, you're being offered a price to sell your holding position at. That's all it is. You're being offered a price. And it's up to you to say yes or no. Why would you treat it any differently to that house in the first place? Like we said, that money should be intentionally put away for a long period of time. If you needed it tomorrow, then it probably shouldn't have been invested in the first place. These are just things to think about if you're an investor, if you're a long-term investor. If you're a trader, different story. Anyway, that's my little rant, my 2 cents on it, and that is the reason why I'm doing absolutely nothing with my investments. Anyway, it's time for my audience questions. Now, none of you had time to write in and ask about the tariffs and about your investments, so hopefully I've already covered a lot of those questions, but if you do have any more questions, you can always DM us on @thatmoneyshow on Instagram. But we had a different question, and it says the following. Hi there, I'm planning to move abroad soon, and I'm wondering if I should close my bank accounts here or keep them open for a while. Also, I'm concerned about how to make the most of my money when changing currencies. Should I exchange all of my money before I go? Or is there a better way to manage this situation? Any advice would be greatly appreciated, and I'm a huge fan of the show. I added that in that last part, but it would have been great if you had said that. Anyway, thanks, Marcus. So moving money and moving countries is a very nuanced level of conversation. Are you moving for a year or are you moving for life? I assume for life at this stage. But at the start of things, you probably don't want to shut down all of your bank accounts straight away. Move somewhere and make sure you're settled there. You've opened up local bank accounts and you are aware of all the tax changes, etc., etc., from moving countries. I don't know your circumstances. Are you British? Were you born here? Are you there for? Are you kind of planning on being a dual citizen? Keeping British citizenship and therefore keeping a lot of your accounts open, the perks that you get, ISAs, pensions, etc., etc., from being a British citizen. But in generally, when it comes to moving money, I think the whole idea is don't make any fast and rash decisions that are irreversible. You can kind of move. There are so many ways to kind of spend efficiently when you're abroad, through travel cards, through debit cards, you know, Monzo, your Revoluts, your Trading 2 on Twos. They all have cards that give you really incredible rates for spending abroad. You can also send some money to an international account once it's open through things like, you know, like the only one that I'm thinking off the top of my head right now is Wise, but there's loads. Remitly, there are really kind of cheap ways to send money to international bank accounts. So there are lots of kind of manageable ways in the meantime to kind of sort yourself out whilst you're getting set up, okay? So like I said, you can kind of spend your British money really cheaply abroad using these kind of methods. You can then start to open a local bank account. Make sure that you are aware of all the tax implications of holding money in the UK versus moving all of your money abroad, how that affects things like your investments, your savings, the tax that you pay on your salary. And then if you are kind of thinking about making that full move, you can do that slowly. Look for ways to transfer it as efficiently as possible without having to pay huge high kind of foreign exchange fees. That's obviously a really important part because they can eat a large amount of your money and your savings. And the last option is to speak to specialists. There are specialists who are aware of how to transfer money between every single country around the entire world. And if you are especially talking about large sums of money that you might have held in one country and moving that across to another country, at that point, it might be worth paying someone by the hour to make sure you are keeping as much of your money as possible when transferring it across. So that, unfortunately, is all I have time for when it comes to questions. There are a few I'll try and answer as many as I can next week, but I appreciate everyone that writes in. Please do ask questions. That is the most important thing in the world of personal finance, asking questions. And you can do it all anonymously because it's on Instagram. You DM us a question you feel is too stupid for you to ask someone in person. Just ask me on the show because I promise you it probably wasn't that stupid. Anyway, I want to say a quick thank you to all of my guests today. We had James McCaffrey from Totally Money. We had Susanna Streeter as well. Thank you to those of you that wrote in. This has been That Money Show. I have been That Money Guy, and you are now officially better with your money.
FUBAR Radio.